So many programs, guys leave and they're like, I know what the Lord has done in my life. I know I don't want to go back to that, but I don't know what to do. If you could just describe what third phase is.
Transitioning is hard for men that have been in a bubble at the ranch. You're going to still be in somewhat of a structured setting, but you have a job. Now you're going to have money to be accountable for, bills, and also getting used to living life, working without your drug. And that is tough. Because those thoughts come into your head, especially when you experience a bad day, it takes time.
Welcome to today's episode of Falling to Freedom, where addiction ends and faith begins, the weekly podcast that brings thoughtful, informed, and challenging discussions about addiction to the forefront of everyone's minds. We join our host now, Chad Lacombe, for today's topic.
So there's a lot of recovery options out there for people that are struggling with substance abuse. I think about my own personal life. I was in and out of 30-day, 60-day dry outs in hospitals. You have treatment programs of varying lengths. You have NAAA outpatient type things. But yeah. One model that seems like it's gaining some traction, which you're familiar with, yes, is that long-term residential type program, often a ranch or a farm or something where there's actually work involved. And I think it's a great model. It's the model that we intend on using for Fully Restored Ministries as well. So today we're joined by Rick Martinez, who's not only a product of that residential, yes, long-term program, but also serving in leadership and a big part of what we're going to get into later, the third phase aspect. So thank you, Rick, for joining us. And if we could just start with you sharing, you know, your own personal testimony of, you know, where you came from.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. It's a privilege to be here. And I'm always willing to share my testimony and just share my journey. Mm-hmm. I believe being able to share that can help so many people that hear it, that are struggling with that same struggle in their lives. Mm-hmm. And my journey is very similar to a lot that I've met being a part of a men's home and a men's, mm-hmm, rehab. But there are differences, I would think. I grew up in Redlands, California. Mm-hmm. I did have a somewhat of a traumatic childhood, only because the bits and pieces I remember were of violence from my biological father. Mm-hmm. And I only remember bits and pieces, but from what I hear, the reason you do remember those things is because it is traumatic. Mm-hmm. It is a thing when a child sees violence and fighting, mm-hmm, and come to find out he was an addict himself, mm-hmm, spent a lot of time in federal prison. Mm-hmm. I didn't know him very well. Mm-hmm. And my mom finally was able to get out of that abusive relationship. She met my stepfather, mm-hmm, who raised me as his own. And from then on, I did feel loved. I felt like I had a family growing up.
How old were you at that point?
She met my stepfather when I was about five, I okay. think. Yeah. And my older sister's 4 years older. So, mm-hmm, so yeah, he joined the Army and we moved to Texas. And so we had a good life. It wasn't until we moved back to California. I started playing sports in eighth grade. And then going into high school, I started playing football, met a bunch of guys that also played football, became good friends. What I noticed about myself, though, was that I had a feeling inside that I needed to be accepted, mm-hmm, into the crowd, mm-hmm, being just a part of it, and not, maybe it came from abandonment or rejection. I wasn't 100% sure why I felt that way, sure, but my buddy introduced me to marijuana when I was 14, mm-hmm, and something about me, I didn't really want to do it. But again, that feeling of wanting to be accepted, mm-hmm, just being a part of the crowd, being so a part of the pressure. Friends. Yeah, definitely peer pressure. And mm-hmm, I tried it and I liked it. It was different. It was something that I never felt before. I could handle it. Nothing happened after, so we just kept doing it. Well, mm-hmm, for me personally, you hear that marijuana is a gateway drug. For, mm-hmm, me, it definitely was, because once I found out that I liked it and I could handle it, then all somebody needed to tell me was that, oh, well, have you tried this? It's better than that. Have you tried this? It's better than that. And I already had the courage to say, well, I've done this before and I mm-hmm. liked it and I can handle it. So then let me try these other things. So by 15, by 16, all through my high school years, I tried cocaine, meth, ecstasy, and I was using on the side of being a jock in high school, being a part of the popular crowd, you could say. And I was doing this all on the side while living that lifestyle of
living two lives.
Living two lives. And that became my identity, was having two identities. And that led through my 20s and everything. So come 17 years old, I joined the military. I joined the U.S. Air Force. I was able to stop all those things in order for me to join. So it never really got to the addict point where I couldn't stop. So I was able to stop. I joined the military. But what I quickly found out is that it doesn't matter where you go, you're still there. And I was obviously still there. And I still had the same mindset. I was a young man living on my own, getting money now. So I found myself going out, partying, going to the clubs, the bars at 18 years old. I was able to find ways to get in, whether it be fake IDs or whatnot. And I was going out Monday through Sunday, living that lifestyle, and then going to work. I had a swing shift, so the time worked perfectly for the way I wanted to live. I left the military, came back to Redlands.
Did you complete?
I did three and a half years. Okay. I did get mixed in because of my choices with people that were also doing the same thing, also being in the military. And I was asked to leave on account of just being involved in things. I did get an honorable discharge, though, because there was really nothing on me. It was more so other people that I knew. So I did get a honorable discharge. I was just asked to discharge early, which
what year was that?
That was in 2007.
Okay.
And that held a lot of shame, a lot of guilt that I couldn't finish, that I couldn't stay. But also at the same time, I was ready to go. I had a relationship with a person in California. So that allowed me to come back home and, you know, take care of that. Well, coming back home in 2007, all my friends were still there doing the same thing, working, but also living that lifestyle of partying and doing whatnot. And the opiate crisis was just I guess they say it went in waves. 1999 was kind of wave one. From 2009, 10, 11, 12 was wave two of the opiate crisis. And then later on, 2020, 21, 22 was the third wave. I was in the second wave. And so all my friends were doing this pill called OxyContin. Knowing me, I said, okay, like they told me the same thing. This is better. This is, you'll like it. I did it. I liked it. The difference was I didn't understand that when you do it enough, your body would require it. So I remember going to work. I was working refrigeration and I started to feel sick, like a flu-like symptoms. And I just figured, I must be coming down with something. When I got home and I told my buddy, I'm like, man, I'm really sick. I just got sick today out of nowhere. And he said, when was the last time you used the OxyContin? I said, I don't know, like a day, maybe like 12 hours, like 12 hours ago. He said, you're withdrawing. And I said, what's that? He said, your body wants to use the drug and you haven't had it in a while. And I said, really? He said, watch this. And he gave me a pill. I did it. And immediately, every symptom that I had, the sweating, the nose runny, my stomach aches, my body aches, everything went away like that.
Wow.
And that's what changed everything for me, because now not only was drug use just for fun, just to feel good, now it was, I don't want to feel that feeling ever again. I don't want to feel sick. At that moment, I had money. I had a job. So I was able to do exactly that. Do enough so I wouldn't be sick. I can still go to work. I can still get a paycheck. But that quickly led to maxed out credit cards, spending all my money, selling all my things. That's when the downward spiral began to happen. I got laid off. I ended up breaking off a relationship that I had for 7 years. Everybody kicked me out of their house because I was taking things that weren't mine and selling them. And I lived on the streets for a good amount of time. I lived in a car for over almost 2 years in San Bernardino that was broken down. I just lived in it with a friend of mine.
What was the, just to, for some context, when you started, came back and you started using OxyContin to when you were basically burned all your bridges, lost your job, and now you're out on the street? What's roughly?
It was about almost 3 years, maybe. Okay. Like 2.5 to 3 years.
Yeah.
I got really sick. I got pneumonia because mm-hmm. I was doing so many drugs, mm-hmm. of smoking and things like that, that I got my lungs collapsed. So I only had half a lung working. Mm. And they said that if I wouldn't have been taken to the ER, they would have collapsed completely. I wouldn't have anything working. And so they had to scrape my throat, a bronchoscopy. They had to get the fluid out of my lungs. And I was in ICU for a while. And you would think that would deter me from using, but it didn't. I just kept going after I got healed and got out.
Well, isn't that interesting? You know you're an addict when you just throw all caution to the wind. Doesn't matter the consequences. You're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, and at that moment, that's when my family found out. I had mm-hmm. to come clean with some stuff. That's when they knew I had a problem. And from then on, it was kind of like all eyes were on me. Mm-hmm. They were nervous that I would go back to it. And that's when everybody started noticing more.
Mm-hmm.
My double life. Mm-hmm. And so eventually I was able to live the double life, show up for holidays, show up for Christmas, Thanksgiving, even though I was homeless on the streets, I would go steal clothes, nice clothes, so I can show up to family events and take pictures and do all that. Even though I was
committed to the double life.
Yeah. Even though my weight was drastically dropping and everything. And I was committed. And eventually I'd stop showing up to Christmas and New Year's, and my family got worried that I was dead. And so they came and found me at a motel in Redlands. And finally, at that moment, I had been experiencing some things in my life at that moment, of being tired, of questioning, like, do I even need to live anymore? There's no purpose in this. I know where this ends, and it doesn't end good, but I can't stop. And so that day, I had planned on doing enough drugs to where hopefully it would take my life. It was that morning I would get my EBT card, I would sell it for money, and I would get drugs. And I planned it. It was going to happen after 10 a.m. when I got that card reloaded. My family showed up that day at 7 a.m. Didn't even know where I was. They just happened to talk to a few people, knocked on the door and said, you need to come with us. They came with the police officers, Redlands PD.
Divine intervention?
I didn't know it then. I didn't know it then. The Lord would reveal that to me later. Mm-hmm. And so I agreed because I was done, Chad. Mm-hmm. I was so tired. And they said, we know of a place. I said, what place? They said, the River's Edge Ranch. And you have to call them and see if they have a bed. And I didn't want to. I wanted to detox at home so I could just stay close to the person I was with, a lady on the streets. The codependency thing. But something told me, just give it a shot, call. I talked to the director, who was Big Al, who you spoke to, and he said, yeah, we have a bed open, but you got to come now. And I said, well, how long is the program? He said, 1 year. And I said, okay, I'll call you back. And I told my parents, like, I'm not spending a year. And they just told me, why? You've spent all these years doing all these things. I said, I'll give you a couple months and we'll just see how it goes. And I was hoping that once I got clean and sober and it was out of my system, they'd let me come home. So they take me up there. I pass out on the way up. I don't know where we're going. I wake up and I'm just seeing animals, desert. I don't know where I'm at.
Where was the river?
There was no river.
River's Edge Ranch. It's not on a river. It sounds very idyllic, you know?
There was no river whatsoever. And so I get there and I'm nervous. I'm scared. I don't know what's going on. And I talked to Big Al and the director then, and they intake me and I agree to stay. And then my family leaves me there. And I start talking to other guys that are at the program. And immediately I felt a type of peace. I didn't know what kind of peace. I just felt okay. I felt like I was in a safe place. Also, I didn't know where I was, so I couldn't leave. I would have to walk probably 5 miles to the nearest town, and I still don't know where I'm at.
Right.
So that was a big part of why I didn't leave. If anything, I was going to wait till I had an avenue to take off. But that began the journey at the ranch for me. And that was in 2015, one day, January 10th, one day before my mom's birthday. So we remember that every year.
Nice. Now, River's Edge Ranch, because we had Doug Whiteman on.
Yes.
Christ-centered residential treatment program. Were you a believer when you went there?
By default, I say, because my family is Christian. Mm-hmm. My grandmother used to take us to church all the time. Mm-hmm. So by default, I wasn't anything else but Christian. So if people ask me, I would say, yeah, I believe in God. I'm Christian. But no, I had no,
you had no relationship.
Personal relationship with the Lord.
Okay. So what was your time at the ranch like?
It was interesting at first. I didn't really understand. I mean, I had been in worship, but I never, it was foreign to me. Prayer, mm-hmm. didn't know how to pray. Mm-hmm. When we would have a time where everybody would have to pray, and I would copy other people's prayers, just mimic mm-hmm. them. The Word, the Bible, I had tried to read it before in the motels. They have the Gideon Bibles in there. And of mm-hmm. course, I think every person that stayed in motels have tried to read it, and it didn't make sense. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, while I got to the ranch, I just figured, while I'm here, I might as well give it all a try. So I started reading. Somebody told me to start with the book of John. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading John. And yeah, I didn't know what a Pharisee was or a Sadducee or anything like that. But when it came to the words of Jesus, I was understanding. Mm-hmm. It made sense to me. And almost to the point where I didn't believe it, that it was real. And I tell this story, and it's a true story, that I thought I was being tricked. Mind you, I still had drugs in my system.
All right.
I thought I was being tricked with this book, that somebody had placed this Bible in front of me, but they were putting stuff in there that didn't make sense. So I would check other brothers that were there. After they would leave their Bible, I would check their Bible to see if it said what my Bible was saying in the same portion of the verses.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was still coming sure. off of a lot of stuff. Sure. But that's how real and how, I guess, it just didn't make sense to me that I could understand this old writings, these ancient writing books mm-hmm. that I had tried before and it made no sense whatsoever.
They're spiritually discerned.
Yes. And so after that, I became very hungry for the Word. I mm-hmm. was asking questions as much as I could.
You were a believer now.
Not yet.
No.
It took me about 2 months. Once I finished the book of John,
mm-hmm.
there was no convincing me otherwise that Jesus was real. He mm-hmm. died, resurrected, and it was for me and everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that my sins would be forgiven if I accepted that and believed that and confessed that. And so 2 months in, I made that decision. And then everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything changed.
Now, before we kind of continue with that, prior to that first 2 months, you know, and I'm bringing this up because there may be people listening that are in a position where they have an opportunity to get off of drugs. And what's presented to them is a one-year program. And like you said, I mean, most people are just like, no way. Right? We pick the path of least resistance, whether it's good for us or not. And most people just want to do 30, 60 days, something like that, if that. But you can't have a decade of use and that go away in 30 days. So in those first 2 months, were you committed to it? Or were you kind of still in the back of your mind thinking, I might bail on this? Or I mean, kind of, obviously, once you gave your life to the Lord and there was some commitment there, probably things changed. But prior to that,
I would say prior to that, I was still, because I had a girlfriend at the time that was in a women's home. Mm-hmm. It was a co-ed at the same time. And she went somewhere and I went to the ranch. I had thoughts of just going there. Mm-hmm. It, why not? She's my girlfriend. It's co-ed. Mm-hmm. We can be in the same place. But something told me that I should just stay. I'm here. I'm here now. It mm-hmm. feels safe. It feels peaceful.
Okay.
The men are nice, like they're very accepting. So for me, I don't think I could have left and mm-hmm. done okay. I think just on the spiritual side, I was accepting the Lord and what the mm-hmm. Bible was telling me at that moment.
So you had resigned yourself, this is where I'm at, I'm gonna at least see it through.
As much as I could.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So, but yeah, as you said, like it's tough to accept a year. I don't think many guys accept it. They say they will and they go just to see how it is. But I think that year program gives a special opportunity for that program to incorporate tons of things
mm-hmm.
that can help a man that's been through what I've been through or other men have been through
mm-hmm.
to kind of be transformed in many different areas of their life.
It takes time.
It takes time.
So what was your experience after receiving the Lord? So I'm assuming you did a full year on the ranch, or
I did,
did you do more?
I did more. I stayed for 2 years and 4 months.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And that first year was a lot having to do with me changing the pathways in my brain of how to react to things, what I think about, just my life in general, why I made decisions I made, why I became an addict, the whole acceptance part of me, a people pleaser. I had to figure that out. Come to my end of the year, I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really encouraged. And I felt the Lord saying that I need to give that back to men coming into the ranch. I need to pour into men like a few men have poured into me early on in my journey. And so I really felt a calling to that. And that's why I stayed into my second year. And phase three, which is what I oversee right now, was not a thought at that moment into my second year.
Okay. So 2 years, 4 months, you stayed on the main ranch. So if I understood you correctly, you did that first year. At the end of that, you felt like, I've been poured into for a year. Now I feel really compelled to pour into others for a year, which ended up being a year and 4 months. And then somewhere in there, we'll be getting to, you know, this vision for a third phase. Was that your idea? Was that someone else's idea, collective, or?
That was Doug Whiteman's idea. Okay. And I think a few other men, because the topic came up, where do these men go after the ranch? What's life after the ranch? And there was no answer. You go wherever you can go. Maybe your family will accept you back, which was my situation. They would have allowed me to come home, but other men don't have that necessarily. So it was a big question, I think, that they were asking among themselves.
It's the right question.
It is
at that point.
Yes.
You know, yeah, there's a lot of other things prior to that, but at that point, it has to be asked, you know, because you're right. So many programs, guys leave and they're like, I know what the Lord has done in my life. I know I'm free from that stuff. I know I don't want to go back to that, but I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And if they don't have like a strong family support and things set up, it's like you're just setting a person up for failure if there's no continued, you know, coming alongside them
Absolutely.
For more of a long term. So you mentioned third phase, and, you know, there's probably going to be a number of people that listen to this that don't know what that means, being connected to, you know, this long-term residential program. And maybe different people, we probably at Fully Restored have a little different, you know, meaning in it. Maybe, I'm not sure. But if you could just describe from your perspective, you know, what third phase is, and then just talk about, you know, how that came about for River's Edge Ranch, and then strengths and weaknesses, and, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Like to just explore that.
It's known in a lot of terms. Some people call it aftercare. The courts like to call it aftercare, which is something after your program that you've attended, sober living, or transitional homes. And that's what phase three is. It's something after the one-year program that men can come down from the ranch and start to work, start to get introduced in back into society, which requires paying bills, driving a car again, working in a job.
Adulting.
Adulting. Back to adult life. And so that's what phase three was. And that was the answer to the question, where do these men go after the ranch? And so early on in my 2 years, I really felt the Lord said, well, this is another reason I kept you here, was that so you could be one of the first to be in these homes and lead by example. Be the first one. So me and two other gentlemen from the ranch were one of the first three men to come down in a home in Bloomington. And the ranch helped us get jobs. They gave us vehicles. And we just stayed down there and we worked. And there was structure. We did go to church. We did go to Bible studies weekly. We did serve, which I think is the main focus of phase three, because transitioning is hard for men that have been in a bubble, you can say, at the ranch, in a very safe, structured setting.
Sure.
Now you're going to come down. You're going to still be in somewhat of a structured setting, but you have a job. You have money, which is huge, because when you used to have money, you used to burn a hole in your pocket. and you would spend it on drugs. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have money to be accountable for, bills, paying your insurance, and also getting used to living life, working without your drug mm-hmm. of choice. And that is tough. That's tough, especially when there's no accountability, yeah. when you're by yourself. It's tough because those thoughts come into your head, mm-hmm. especially when you experience a bad day. Learning a new job is tough. Mm-hmm. I remember they got me a job doing locksmithing, mm-hmm. and I remember looking at this big wall of keys that I had to figure out which one went to every car. And immediately I felt very, almost like a defeated type of feeling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, like I have to learn a new job, a new trade out of nowhere. I just have to start over and I'm 32. Mm-hmm. It's
humbling.
It's humbling. It's tough. It's one thing to be 28 years old and just completely hopeless when I got to the ranch. Mm-hmm. And it's also another humbling, tough decision or feeling when you have to come out and now you have to start over again mm-hmm. and do it without what you used to do, which used to help you get through life. Mm-hmm. So I think phase three is super important because you have a lot of men on the same journey that go to work, that come home, that go to Bible study with you, that go to church with you, and you guys are able to speak about your day, your days, the tough times, the good times, promotions, just everything. You're still sharing life with the men that you did up at the ranch.
Would these be people that you already knew from the ranch?
There is a little overlap. It just depends. But most of the guys, since we've been together, we see each other at church, we get to know each other and we build a brotherhood. So yes, a lot of the men that mm-hmm. are in there in phase three only come from the ranch. Mm-hmm. You have to finish a year to be eligible for phase three. So it's all mm-hmm. ranch men.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, otherwise if you didn't have that pre-existing relationship or connection, then maybe you just get a house full of people doing their own thing. That's yes. probably not good.
And there's places like that. Yeah. And yeah, so, but no, all these men know each other very well. A lot of them have went through the journey of the ranch mm-hmm. Together, side by side, which is also pretty cool that they get to come down now and celebrate, hey, we made it through, now let's get to work. And I think a lot of phase three is structured behind the way the ranch was and mm-hmm. what worked at the ranch, the work, the serving, the community, and the faith. Mm-hmm. I think all that is purposely created at the ranch in order for you to take it after the mm-hmm. ranch. And I believe we didn't get to talk about it too much, but just the work aspect of how you find your worth, you find some purpose in it. Mm. You're able to go to work, come home, lay your head down and say, I put some effort in today. I feel like I accomplished something, but now you get a paycheck. So that's even better for these guys. You didn't get paid.
Paycheck at the ranch.
You didn't get to get paid to clean horses or pig stalls.
Yeah. Well, so, God created, especially us men, with not only a desire and the ability, but a need to work and produce. You know, there's a phrase, the dignity of work, you know, and that is missing when somebody is not doing meaningful things and producing, like you said, an honest day's work and tired at the end of the day, fall down on your pillow, feel good about your day. I mean, it's healthy.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. And I learned that just by working with the horses. Mm-hmm. We talked about the dependency on drugs and then the codependency in relationships mm-hmm. out there on the streets. But when you work with an animal, you're not getting anything in return, even though there is dependency there. They're depending on you to feed them, to clean up the area because they could get sick. It's a good type of dependency, a healthy type of dependency that you're learning and mm-hmm. that there's nothing in return. There's no paycheck. Mm-hmm. The horse isn't going to tell you thank you. There's nothing. It's just a type of work that you find. And I think that's part of the animal therapy mm-hmm. that comes with it. I think that's more deep into it. It's just your responsibility and your task, and it's mm-hmm. up to you to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of men find comfort in that and find some kind of healing in that. Mm. And that's with any of the animals up there. So the men bring it down. And I think they feel grateful when they get a paycheck now, when they get to work. And a lot of men are, after they're at phase three for a little bit, we encourage them to set goals. Mm-hmm. Want more for yourself. Maybe the first job isn't your career. Maybe the first job isn't where you're going to stay. It's just a stepping stone to get used to going to work, coming mm-hmm. home, you know, taking a shower, maybe going to Bible study, go to sleep, and do it all over again. Because I know that that can get very overwhelming, the monotony of it, just the routine of it, because we used to live a crazy adrenaline rushed lifestyle, and now it's a lot different. And I often tell the men, you can find joy in your job, especially if you enjoy it. You enjoy your trade, you enjoy what you do, but you also got to figure out how to find joy in serving people, in coming home and just being able to be with family. Maybe you're able to be the uncle you've always wanted to be, the brother you've always wanted to be, the husband you've always wanted to be, the dad you've always wanted to be. Stepping into those roles now that you've have found healing yourself and finding real joy in those things, because
those are relationships.
Relationships. And also in serving people, building relationships with people you don't know.
Sure.
Helping out, stepping out and serving people that are still in their addiction, still on the streets, and giving back, I guess, the wisdom and knowledge that you've learned along your journey.
Well, it's also the exact opposite of an addict's mentality, right? Addict's mentality is selfish and self-centered. Everything is about you.
Yes.
So it's very healthy to make your focus about others and not about you, you know?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that even though you're not an addict anymore per se, that's your past, but it's still a part of your life. It's there. The selfishness comes, especially when you feel, hey, I finished the program. I put in the work. I deserve to have this job. I deserve to make this kind of money. I deserve, if I don't want to go to these places, I deserve this vehicle that you give us. That type of thinking and mindset does creep in.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where being a leader of these homes, being on the board of directors now for the ranch, I have to remind these men that, yes, you put in the work. Yes, you took a step of faith. Yes, you've kept it going. But we don't deserve any of this. We don't, it's grace that we have all this. It's blessings that we have all this. And your responsibility now is to be a good steward of the things that are given to you. It's not because you deserve them. It's the grace that they've been given to you. And now you have the responsibility to take care of them and be a good steward of them, whether it be relationships, your job, your position in the program, just your spot in the program, because other men are looking at you seeing how you handle it now, that you have more freedom, that you have money in your pocket now, now that you're back with your family. They're looking at all that because there's a guy that's at step one of their recovery compared to a guy that's been there for 2 years. And so
So there's still interaction?
There's a lot of interaction.
Even after a man goes from the ranch to third phase, there's still interaction.
Yes, because we meet up with the men usually on Sundays or at different events. And so, yes, there's a lot of
interaction. I think it's important, just for what you were saying. It's good for the person that is down this road to look back and see where they came from, but it's also good for the person starting out to see where they could be with some faithfulness and just putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, and I've had a unique opportunity of being on the board, seeing the logistics of it all, knowing what goes into how the ranch runs, and then being in the program myself and not knowing any of that. And I can see where you should be grateful because so much goes into it that we don't see as a rancher. And I have the opportunity to kind of be that bridge for the men. So when they get into that mindset, I can remind them, like, hey, there's a lot of things you guys don't see that gives you the opportunity to go to work, have a vehicle to get there. You don't have to take shuttles like other places do with 10 men going to work and dropping you off and picking you up. You have a little bit of freedom and blessing to get this journey going and keep up your journey of sobriety. And it's been really an interesting journey. I've seen men come and go. The relapse rate is real. Luckily, I believe relapse percentage-wise for addicts is 40 to 60% after a year program. Ours is about 10 to 20% coming out of the ranch and going to phase three.
A third or quarter.
Yeah. And so we have a good 80% success rate of men that can finish out of phase three. Of not relapsing again. So it's been good.
And what do you attribute that to? The difference?
The amount of time, I think, because it gives, like you said, most of these men, depending on their age, have been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. The more time you have under your belt sober, mm-hmm. and just doing life, building a routine, having the accountability through all that, mm-hmm. helps them to just keep going. It just keeps going. And what I think, the faith part is a little different. You can't really make somebody follow the Lord, mm-hmm. Participate more in church. That has to be something they want to do. Mm-hmm. But I think a successful man that comes out of the ranch is somebody that's growing, somebody that's wanting more for their life, that is being now a strong foundation in their families, whether it be a father, mm-hmm. to their kids now, paying their child support now, taking care of all, mm-hmm. the fines and things they owe, money, taxes. Most of these guys don't get taxes for a couple years, myself included, when you start working, because now you owe things that you did before. Mm-hmm. And so just dealing with all of that and still being able to keep your sobriety, mm-hmm. I think that's a big success coming, mm-hmm. out of phase three.
Okay. So what would be, if you were to just articulate strengths and weaknesses from like a third phase ministry? So not every long-term residential program has that kind of aftercare component. You know, a lot don't. So what would be strengths and weaknesses from your time? Because you helped develop it, right? You've been running it for, what, 3 years or something? Or?
Yes, and I've been in a lot of the trial and error. Mm-hmm. I think having a structure still, because they're leaving structure, mm-hmm. and coming to a place, it's important to keep them in a structure, because most men, especially from our background, do well in structure. Mm-hmm. We don't do well when there's no structure, because, mm-hmm. now it's up to us to make the decisions on our own. And oftentimes an addict doesn't make the best decisions. So I think the structure is good to keep, mm-hmm. that in place, to get them more time in a structure under their belt, so that when they leave, it's already ingrained in them. It's become, mm-hmm. a habit because you've done it so much.
What would that structure look like?
Like I said, going to work, mm-hmm. Doing all your responsibilities, your tasks.
Chores or something around the house.
Yeah, taking care of the things that belong to you. Mm-hmm. And then also, we encourage, you know, stay connected, stay in community, stay with your brothers. And so we do have a lot of men that do leave, mm-hmm. phase three, but they keep coming to church, mm-hmm. coming to Bible studies, coming to ranch events, mm-hmm. and that's their goal, that they need to stay connected. They need the accountability, mm-hmm. because it's so easy for those intrusive thoughts to come in when things don't, you know, people have experienced the death of loved ones, mm-hmm. getting fired from jobs, maybe relationships ending, marriages ending. All these things are tough emotions to go through when you don't have the drugs you used to be able, mm-hmm. to numb them. And so you have to deal with them. And so I think that's important to, that's why you need to stay in community. You, mm-hmm. have other people to talk to, wise counsel, all these things that incorporate just a circle around you, a protective, yeah. circle that can help you, continue to help you when you fall. And so I think the phase three in the ranch has been a great addition. The phase three has been a great, mm-hmm. addition, because it allows for that for men coming straight off the ranch.
Is there anything that you would add to third phase? Mm-hmm. If you could snap your finger, you know, even if there's a financial cost, let's just say the money was there for it or whatever. Is there something that you can think of that would improve, you know, the model that you guys have created there for third phase?
Well, I know I'm very familiar of what Falling to Freedom and your guys' aspirations or dreams are, the things that, mm-hmm. the Lord's put on your heart. And I think that is super important, that a, mm-hmm. trade, maybe, mm-hmm. trades that these men can walk into, mm-hmm. and have the opportunity to learn right off the bat, mm-hmm. jump right into it, start learning something. Because learning a trade, mm-hmm. as myself, I'm a refrigeration tech. That's, mm-hmm. a trade. I'm okay. My job security is always there. During COVID, I was essential. Like, it, mm-hmm. was something that is very beneficial, mm-hmm. to men, especially having to start over, because, sure. now you can learn something that can just take you years and years. It is now a career. It's something, mm-hmm. to do. So I think trade schools, mm-hmm. if we can get some type of door opening for that, mm-hmm. that we can get men straight into trade schools and get the just get their feet running as soon mm-hmm. as they get out. Or even if it's not as soon as they get out, there's just always that option.
Sure.
That if they want to do better, because it's easy for men to get comfortable in just a regular job, which is fine if that's what they want to do. But a lot of men in phase three have aspirations to do more.
Yeah. Well, and the time, I mean, like the timing is right. I mean, you have many people in the business world right now, especially manufacturing and all these, they're saying we need skilled workers. There's like, we're quickly approaching a situation where, you know, there's these people retiring and there's no one replacing them. And everyone is, for the most part, focusing on the youth, mm-hmm. right? Introducing trade schools and things back into high school and stuff like that. And Absolutely. That's great. But what about this whole segment of society that for a long time has been a burden on society because of addiction, now get sober, become back and reintroduced into society as productive members and help fill that role? I mean, it's like, seems like a no-brainer.
Absolutely. And something that we see a lot of times at the ranch is that men come in with skills. Mm-hmm. They've done HVAC, they've done construction, they've done plumbing, they've done welding, they've done automotive. Like, it's in their background. They just became addicts and lost it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, if they have another opportunity to get back into it after the ranch, how great is that? That they can get back kind of what they lost before. Mm-hmm. And we've had many men get back into the trades that they were doing. They just have to, there's no avenue really. They have to show initiative and go after it. So I think that would be a great thing for the men mm-hmm. that we can just have options.
I love the fact that you guys, you briefly mentioned it earlier that you guys provide a car for the men coming out of the ranch, going to the third phase. And then I believe that the requirement is, you know, 1 year of faithfulness there, and then they get the title to the car. But I just love that, because it's looking to something very practical that is super beneficial. Yeah, there's some cost involved in doing that, but it's like, the difference that something like that makes is huge. You know, I love the fact that you guys do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was pretty shocked when I heard, because that was all new also. That mm-hmm. had to come with phase three. And it started with me and those two other men.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, we have three cars that we can give you guys to make it to work. And we were just like, okay.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah, like, we don't have to take the bus. That helps tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. You know, and not to say that people couldn't have a shuttle and just shuttle you guys to mm-hmm. work, or you guys all worked at the same place, or ride a bike, or mm-hmm. take the bus. Who's to say that that wouldn't work?
Sure.
But it's just a blessing that it's been this way since it started, that every man gets a vehicle, gets blessed with a vehicle. So yeah, it's been amazing.
I think it's huge. Well, Rick, I appreciate you coming and speaking with us. Did you have anything else you wanted to share about the ranch or the third phase before we wrap
up? Yeah, I would just like, I mean, I'm grateful to be here, and I'm glad that you have this podcast to just bring knowledge and a light to addiction and just the different avenues. I've seen mm-hmm. the different people you've had on here, and it's been a blessing. And I would just say to the listeners, maybe family members of people that are in addiction, maybe you have somebody struggling with it right now listening mm-hmm. or that will come across it, that something I heard when I was deciding to go to the ranch and then after I go to the ranch was mm-hmm. that I kept hearing people, random people, tell me that you can't do it alone.
Mm.
And it just stuck with me. It just, because I heard it so much, kind of weirdly a lot mm-hmm. at the beginning. And I would just tell those people that that's huge to understand and really accept that you can't do it alone. Many people think they can stop when they want, but you do need community. You do need people around you. And you also have to make that choice to change. And it does take a step of faith. It does take a lot of sacrifice, surrender, which is the toughest thing that any of us addicts can do.
Mm.
But there are places like the ranch, like mm-hmm. something that you guys are going to be a part of soon and start mm-hmm. soon, that there's places where you don't have to be alone. You can get the help you need and the encouragement you need to really understand your true identity and mm-hmm. what that looks like. Because I was also told once, if you don't know the truth, it's easy to believe the lies. Mm-hmm. And I believed so many lies for so many years until I started realizing what the truth was about mm-hmm. myself, about who I'm supposed to be and my purpose and destiny here while I'm here. So I would just encourage your listeners to reach out to people. There's places, there's safe places that you can go and find the help you need.
Totally agree. And once again, what's the web address for the River's Edge Ranch?
It is theriversedgeranch.org.
Okay, www.theriversedgeranch.org.
Yes, and you can find videos of the ranchers, mm-hmm. their everyday routines, and there's an application on there that you could fill out, or anybody that needs to fill one out can do it right there mm-hmm. online.
So. And I saw that you guys were named the number one nonprofit in 2025 in all of California.
It's amazing.
That's pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
And, man, what a testament.
Just to see the journey, being a part of it since 2015 till now, and then getting that award, mm-hmm. Glory to God, it's crazy. Yeah.
Keep up the good work, Ray.
Thank you, Chad. I appreciate it.
All right, God bless.
God bless.
Thank you for being a part of this much-needed conversation as we expose the raw truths about addiction. Don't forget to like, follow, and most importantly, share. Remember, addiction is the dirty little secret that every family deals with, but nobody wants to talk about.